Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Guten Tag and welcome to part 2 of our 2022-23 Zweite Bundesliga review. This episode will be discussing the teams that finish in what you'd classify as mid-table, positions 7th through 12th. Some teams on this list will be quite happy with the seasons they've had, whilst others will be left wondering what could have been. As always, to help me digress, digest, and understand what happened for these six teams throughout the course of the campaign is Eva Lottebolla. Eva, good morning to you. Let's just say... Oh, hello. We usually cut out, but we're back in business. That'll be in the recording. This is how we're going on a traditional Wednesday.
It was all to happen at some stage this season.
The fact that we've gone 39 episodes without any sort of technical glitch. Well, we've had one, but this is the first live one. That's pretty good for us, considering everything that's happened at our clubs this season. But look, some of these teams will be absolutely thrilled with how they finished, where they finished, especially two sides who gained promotion from the Dritte Liga. But there are definitely a couple of sides in this list who will be less than satisfied with how their campaigns went.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I mean, the thing is, because it was so tight, but also at some stage you had just teams where you think with a little bit more consistency, they have the potential where they could have been, etc. And obviously, it's always when you those are the teams where then because they finished mid-table, you normally have like a bigger just new structuring in the team than you had before. I mean, the first thing we're going to talk about is a case where you say, okay, it's going to be a bit difficult to kind of replicate what they did in parts of this season just because a couple of players won't be there. At the same time, I think it's good because those teams, some of them is where we more or less always categorize them somewhere mid-table because it's always kind of difficult to say where they could go, but we also, to be honest, always say if they end up a bit higher or lower throughout the season, we kind of take them as exceptions, but in the end they kind of end up where we would expect them to be just because of what they offer throughout the league. There obviously have been some teams where we didn't really expect them to end up that low or that high, but luckily enough we have once again fantastic fans and experts who will try to summarize that for us, so you won't hear us doing that again as we did, especially with some of the teams for the whole season.
Yes, 34 consecutive match days of us talking about the same 18 teams. And, you know, majority of the time, we're quite neutral. Other times, especially when it involves our own clubs, we're a lot more self-critical. So it's definitely great to have fan perspective on how they felt their seasons went. And, you know, it helps us also get a better understanding and perspective that we wouldn't otherwise have from being on the outside. Let's start with the team that finished 7th this season. That was Karlsruhe. 13 wins, 7 draws, 14 losses, 56 goals. 4-53 against their top scorer was Fabian Schleusner with 14. And then Marvin Vanitzek and Mikael Kaufmann with 10. Kaufmann is, of course, on his way to Union Berlin. The assist getters, the same three. The big reliance on those three. They also had a reliance on goalkeeper Marius Gersbeck, who had an excellent season. He is going back to Hertha. And it was announced at the moments later that Patrick Drouez, who was with Sandhausen, will be joining them, along with the well-awaited return of Lars Stindl. They had a decent season. It was a little bit chaotic, probably not as chaotic as the following team we'll talk about. But there was a lot to look forward to with the Wildparkstadion finally reaching its completion. Things are on the up for Karlsruhe. Let's hear from Boris, who is one part of the Die Wildparkbrudler podcast. Everything Karlsruhe in the German language. They are your go-to guys. Let's hear what they have to say.
So our season started a bit bumpy. Obviously, we had to compensate the loss of Philipp Hoffmann. I think that was one of the main topics at the beginning of the season, having lost him to VfL Bochum. Created a bit of a gap up front. We had nobody really that, you know, we thought that could compensate these 15 to 17 goals that he would score, yeah, per season. But often it was forgotten that we still have Fabian Schleusner up there, who did a really good job this season. But nevertheless, the club really wanted to get a few more strikers in, and so they did. They got Mikkel Kaufmann from FC Copenhagen on loan for the year, and Simone Rapp, who came from Vaduz, from Liechtenstein, from the second Swiss division. But like I said, the start of the season was still a bit bumpy. The first three matches were, yeah, very poor from a results perspective. I mean, the first match, I remember it clearly, 5-0 away. We lost away at Paderborn. Although we had a really, really good first half, I would say. Second half, I think we conceded 4 goals in like 10 minutes or something, which was, yeah, shocking. And from there, it went a bit more downhill. We lost 3-2 at home to Magdeburg, who we thought we could beat, freshly promoted to the second Bundesliga. Third game, it was still in our heads. We played 1-1 against Fürth. And then we thought, okay, maybe now we finally stabilized. We didn't concede more than 2 goals, let's say. And we had to hope that our new signings up front could eventually score a couple of more goals. Eventually, we got into shape. We started on the front foot, and we turned it around. We beat Sandhausen 3-2, and then Regensburg away 6-0, which nobody had imagined at all, because Regensburg also was one of the teams that usually start off really well and play within the top 5, and nobody understands how they actually did that. And then we started to get into rhythm. We had a couple of wins in a row that was good for us. We collected the points that we needed. And then we entered a period where, oddly enough, we lost almost every centre-back apart from Daniel Gordon, who's almost 40 years old, and Marcel Franke. And it was very difficult to be stable at the back, because we had literally no one there. Daniel O'Shaughnessy out. Then we had Cobalt out. We had Ambrosius, I think he came on as well around that time. He was still trying to fit in, but he did it really well together with Marcel Franke then, and conceded loads of goals in the end, especially around injury time. That was one of our problems. You know, we struggled to stay focused and keep the concentration levels very, very high towards the end. And in the winter break, we had to get loads of new players in. We had to compensate that. We had at some point 8 centre-backs, which we knew will become a problem once everybody else comes back. So a lot of players were not happy. They didn't play. There was a lot of, I wouldn't say issues, but yeah, like I said, unhappy players. They didn't know what will happen. And obviously we would have to offload them this summer. But after the World Cup break, you know, sometime in February, we realized that shit is going to hit the fan. Excuse my French. We were second bottom. Like I said, conceded loads of goals at the end. I remember, I think it was the last match before the World Cup break, 4-4 against San Pauli. We came back the first 2 games. We conceded a late goal against Paderborn, a late goal against Magdeburg, and it did not look good for us. We were struggling. A lot of fans were criticizing Christian Eichner, the head coach. Some of them were thinking, you know, it's time to go. Whereby I still believe we should hold onto him, and hopefully he can turn it around. Because the club wants to follow this philosophy that, for example, SC Freiburg are doing with Christian Streich. That's something that we hope for. And in the end, he actually did turn it around, Christian Eichner and his team. I remember it. We had a very weird game against Greuther Fürth once again, at home. We were down 2-1, had one man less, and we still turned it around 3-2 at the end together with the fans and yeah, new stadium that is currently growing. And this helped us. And then from there on, we started really well again. We had, I think, 5 or 6 wins in a row, which helped us to separate from the bottom bit, if you could call that, the relegation area. We really needed to get away from there because suddenly it was really, really dense up down there. You know, you could win 2 games and you are out of there. You could lose 2 games, you're bottom. It was really tricky, this period, I think, for all the clubs that were down there. And yeah, I could also say, because I talked about him earlier, Mikkel Kaufmann, obviously a striker that did take his time to kind of break into the team. And in the winter break, he was working really, really hard. He was there. He was fiery, and he wanted to contribute. And he did that with scoring, 10 goals and 8 assists within the season, which is a contribution of 32%, which is a lot. But unfortunately, he decided not to accept the contract offer. You know, the club was there to spend 1 million euros on him because we had the buying option. And then a bit later, 1st of April, it was not an April Fool's joke, but the club released the director of football, Oliver Kreuzer, out of the blue. But the reasons were because he could not provide the club a proper strategy to move the club forward in a sporting point of view. And it was a bit of a shock. It was not an April Fool's. I think the communication on the 1st of April was a bit unlucky, but the club even had to verify that and say, this is not an April Fool's. A bit shocking for everyone. We did have some ups and downs at the end, but it all looked like we secured the league after the good win 4-2 against Arminia Bielefeld. And greater news were following. Lars Stindl from Borussia Mönchengladbach, he decided to return to Karlsruhe, to his home next season, signed a 1-year deal, and we're all very happy for him to return to us. He will be a great addition to the squad, and we can't wait to see him in our stadium. In the last couple of matches, we still had one goal. We wanted to finish above Kaiserslautern, our rivals from the region, and we did. We, in the end, became 7th, got that spot. We even beat them 2-0 at home in our last home game. Which was very emotional with the farewell to Daniel Gordon, who has hung up his boots, so to speak. Let's see where he's going to stay or where he's going to end up. You know, he's still trying to become a coach or he's doing the coaching badges. Not sure whether he's going to stay at the club, whatever function that may be. But the club is very open to work with him. That's my latest. But yeah, in the end, like I said, the second half of the season was really positive. 28 points, scored 30 goals. Much better than the first term where we had 18 points. So we scored 10 points more in the second half of the season. Ended up 7th with 46 points, 56 goals scored, which is really good to hear or to see because, as I said at the beginning, we thought we are not going to compensate Philipp Hoffmann, or a lot of fans were thinking we wouldn't be able to compensate. But we did. We had a lot of goal scorers among the whole team, and that was really good. And yeah, next season, hopefully we can build up on that. My personal view is that we hope that we try and, be as good, maybe better. With Lars Stindl and Marvin Vanicek also extended his contract. So I think we have a very strong midfield. All we need to do is tighten up our defense, and the squad is meant to be made a little bit younger. We had an aging squad, you could say that actually, and hopefully next season and the seasons after that, we will have a younger team, and that should help us to adapt to the modern football, to the fast-paced football nowadays. And the second Bundesliga, anyway, is a Wundertüte, as we say, a lucky dip. So that was our season, and at the end of this rollercoaster ride, it was a very happy ending.
Thank you very much, Boris. And look, there's actually a lot to look forward to for Karlsruhe heading into next season, but they've had some really good performances. One thing that struck me was definitely as the stadium continued to get built, as it seems to be the running joke for the last 3 seasons, that sort of left of screen end, which they, because based on where they've got the camera, is always packed to the rafters. And they seem to, especially in home games, we talked about the Kaiserslautern game in particular, which was a game they almost had no right winning, but they took advantage of Kaiserslautern doing what they tended to do towards the end of the season, which was burn chances. But look, like last season, they enter the new campaign with a lot of questions of how they're going to replace certain players. As Boris mentioned, the worry was Philip Hoffman, replacing the amount of goals that he scored, but Fabian Schleusner stepped up, and now you've got the Kaufmann situation. But they seem to have a very good next man up situation, and it came in handy, especially through some of the tougher times this season.
Yeah, and I mean, Boris summed it up very perfectly and very thorough. And I think what Karlsruhe has done in the past under Christian Eichner, and has done this season once again, is that when it comes to deciding matches, so very, like, where in hindsight you say, okay, winning this game was vital going forward, I think they've managed to do so. And I mean, even the 4-4, I remember we sat here because we talked about it in the St. Pauli perspective a lot, trying this, like, whoever loses this is in the need of a new coach. And I mean, in the end, and nobody lost the game, but I mean, in the end, it turned out for both sides that was the right thing to do. Karlsruhe in keeping Christian Eichner, obviously, and St. Pauli taking on Fabian Hürzeler. But I mean, I think what Karlsruhe has, what Karlsruhe always, I think of, is at the same time, if they start conceding goals, there's always the possibility they concede a lot more or a couple of more in the space of a small time, because they had their difficulties when it came to build up play and errors throughout play. But at the same time, as soon as they started scoring goals, it was also very, very difficult to stop them, because it was a very natural thing to do for them. As soon as the kind of hype train got rolling, that was when they were at their best. And obviously, in the end, if you look at seventh place, this is the best table position they had in the second leg of the season, and the second best table positioning for the whole season. They were in sixth place. But I just think, like, obviously we spoke about this as in the first part of a season review, that's obviously always a bit difficult with having big names like Hertha and Schalke dropping down, someone like ASV staying, how the field behind that will start to roll up. But I think, yeah, obviously it's a shame Mikkel Kaufmann goes to Union. But obviously with Lars Stindl, he was very important for Gladbach, had a huge impact, and obviously he's very connected to the club. It will be interesting to see how Christian Eichner and him work together. In general, I like the idea of them kind of having what Heidenheim did, what Freiburg did, like this kind of perspective that you really have everyone who goes to Karlsruhe in the future will know what to do and what kind of thing they're looking for, and they're like that you have a perfect feeling with Jan-Niklas Beste at Heidenheim, and it's probably something we'll build on. But I would agree that especially when it comes to younger players, this is a field they definitely have to develop themselves, and kind of obviously with Gordon leaving, it's good that someone like Stindl comes in who has an automatic connection to the club, but obviously they will kind of need to rebuild that some sort of formation. But I'm pretty sure they will find a way, and we will see how Karlsruhe will end up next season and how we will see them next season.
Yeah, look, they're going to be one of those teams that if you look at what they need to do in the window, they've already addressed the goalkeeper situation, and they did that literally moments after Hertha announced the Gersbeck staff with Patrick Drouet, as we mentioned. But obviously beefing up the centre-back core, there were a few games where they looked very disconnected as a defensive four, and that's something that they can build on. But forward of midfield, they'd certainly look a bit stronger. Obviously, Stindl was a great get for them. I would say that there's a lot to be hopeful with, but as you said, Eva, and we'll probably harp on it in our season preview, with those bigger teams coming down, it does make it a lot harder, but stranger things have happened. This is the Zweite Bundesliga. Let's move on to Kiel. Now, they had a turbulent season, if anyone, if we're talking about any club. 12 wins, 10 draws, 12 defeats, 58 goals for. They didn't have a problem scoring goals, but they also knew how to concede them. They gave up 61 goals, which was, if my memory serves me correctly, the third worst defense in the league, behind two of the sides that were relegated. Their top scorer was Steven Skripski. He scored 15 goals. He was the third top scorer in the division, and it was the second highest amount of goals scored by a Kiel player in the Zweite Bundesliga. Fabian Riese scored 11 goals and 11 assists. He's departing for Hertha. And Finn Bartels, who's retired at the end of this season, he scored 5 goals, 2 of those coming in his final game at Hanover. Let's hear from Mark and Pike. These guys run the Holstein Kiel football podcast. Let's hear what they had to say about their season.
Hello and welcome to our little review of the last season. We are Mark
and Pike
from 1912FM CCK's Holstein Kiel podcast. Our season was a bit like a roller coaster. It feels like you die, but in the end you arrive where you started. Last season we finished on the 9th position and this year on the 8th. So if you look on the table, it's not so bad. We could be quite happy, but the whole season it felt like something is wrong.
Yeah, sometimes we had some good games but didn't win. And yeah, over the whole season, I think the defense was destroying everything our offense worked for. And this cost us a lot of points. We also had good games where we didn't win. We had bad games where we win. So you never knew what to expect.
Yeah, that's the review of our season, really concrete. Now we want to come to our highlights and lowlights of the season. One highlight, of course, is Steven Skripski. He played very well in the first half of the season. You could even say he overperformed. His position was more behind the striker, and he had a lot of freedom how he played. So he made a lot of goals, a lot of assists. But in the second half of the season, Rapp, our coach, changed his position. So he was more in the front, like on the ninth position in the attacking squad, or on the outsides. It didn't work so well like before.
Yeah, the next highlight, I think, is Philipp Sander, a player from our own youth academy, and he becomes now a very important player for our team. He's got better from game to game and evolved to a starting 11 player now. And yeah, this is great to see that a player from our own youth is, now a very good player in the starting 11. The other player we need to say is Fabian Riese. He had a very great season. He will leave the club and will now play for Hertha in Berlin. But still, after the announcement, he performed very well and always gave 100%. And yeah, this was great to see.
Yeah, beside the players, I think one game that everybody is still remembering very good is the draw in Hamburg. It was not the best football game to watch, but it was very emotional. The players played with a lot of heart, so it was fun to watch. From this side of you. And I think that's 2 points that Hamburg is really missing now. For the lowlights, we also have, of course, something in this season. It's, of course, our coach, Rapp, the performance on place 8 is totally fine, on the 8th place. As Holstein Kiel, we can be happy with the place in the second Bundesliga. But how we got there was terrible most of the time.
Yeah, I think under Rapp, we only got 2 games that was very good. I think it was a 3-1 home win against Heidenheim and the last match of the season, the 5-1 win in Hanover. But I think we played the worst football in the second Bundesliga under Rapp. And most of the time, it was very hard to recognize even a match plan or a tactic. So it was not very good.
Yeah, and here also, we like you said, we had at least two good games, but also very bad games, like the 7-2 loss against Paderborn. That sounds already terrible. And even the 2-3 away win against Rostock was such a terrible game. This game didn't deserve a winner at all.
Yeah, I think this game didn't even deserve a single viewer. It was very, very bad. Very hard to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, now to our expectation for next season. On one side, we are very negative because we lost a lot of players. Right now, I think 11 players will leave us.
Yeah, especially the end of the career of Finn Bartels is very sad for us, maybe for whole football Germany. Yeah, in the last game, he scored two goals as a goodbye and yeah, showed us that he is still better than most of the other players in our team, maybe in the whole league. So this is very sad, but yeah, we wish all the best for Finn Bartels.
Yeah, of course. Another reason of why we are a bit negative in the expectations is, of course, our coach Rapp, because beside the big change in the team, there's also the big doubts that he has the quality for the second Bundesliga, at least right now. Yeah,
but on the other side, some new faces will come. Some transfers are already announced, like Simakala from Osnabrück. It's a very good player. The whole team gets younger, and maybe this player will understand the idea of Rapp, and yeah, maybe the football next season maybe get better.
Yeah, we hope so. Either way, we are very excited about how the team will look like next season, and especially how we will play football, because that's really important for us. Yeah, thanks for giving us some time on the podcast.
Yeah, and hope to hear you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Mark and Pike, and some very interesting perspective on the season as a whole, and I was not expecting the drive-by of Marcel Rapp, but in fairness, if you look at their best and worst performances this season, it's probably a great microscope of where Kiel are at the moment. Their best is really good. It could have been a top five worthy sort of situation, but their worst was just an aberration and really a sort of a bleach to the eyes of football. Like they were so far apart. You can sense the frustration, and there is definitely an understanding, and definitely a team that we expect is going to get stripped back and have a completely new look heading into the new season. But as a whole, how they got to eighth is still a mystery. It was one of the clubs that we spoke about frequently as not having any idea what they are, what they want to be, where they want to go. And I think the guys summed it up quite well.
Yeah, I would agree. And I mean, with we said before with Kia was that this 5-1 against Hanover was just like a perfect summary of the season, because it obviously had something to do with their opponents. At the same time, it was very weird because we've seen so many games by Kiel where they just on paper they were the better team because they created more chances, they were better in duels and stuff, but they couldn't really bring that on the score sheet. And I think this was really, really their biggest problem, which whatever idea they had, it was too much of a theory than that was actually shown on the pitch, or that it was that the quality of their chances were in the end just not good enough, where at some stage you could always see that some sort of frustration was coming through. And I mean, obviously, I think Kiel is the only team Armenia won against twice. And it's just because they obviously lacked some sort of just scoring the goaliness kind of stuff, so that you just the determination of scoring goals. They had a very good determination of conceding goals, as you mentioned before, and obviously that was a problem. And yeah, I think in the end, the table plays just, if you look at where they have been in the season, that's fine. But obviously, I also think that they need some sort of stability, which is going to be hard to get with all the changes, obviously, the guys just mentioned. But they really need stability. And I mean, I'm obviously it's always different from looking from an outside perspective. It's just cute games in general, fun to watch if you're neutral, because normally a lot is going to happen and some unexpected stuff is going to happen. But I think, especially for fans and for ex-fans of the club, it's very frustrating at some point, because you see what the team can do, but it doesn't happen enough. And if you're eighth place and you only find two games kind of to point out, one of them is a 0-0 draw. That's and obviously the win against Heidenheim and then the win against Hannover, and the win against Hannover was on last match day, and really want to kind of scrap that away a bit, because for both teams there was nothing on the table. It's just very, very difficult. It seems very harsh, but I think it's very difficult to say anything against it, because obviously you always have games where Kiel offered something, but they weren't really able to consistently bring them on pitch. It's very weird that we're already being so negative about someone who ends up above the mid of the table, middle of the table, but obviously it's everything they said was very true.
I think like they made some great points, and they were talking about games that they were easily the better team in and they found ways to lose. And the one that sticks to mind was the home game against Jahn Regensburg, where they absolutely just kicked and just dominated Jahn for about 70 minutes and then just found a complete... They completely melted away. And Regensburg had two genuine opportunities, and they put them to the sword. And it was like, well, yeah, like defensively they were a travesty, and that's the one area in particular they need to work on. And obviously replacing Fabian Riese, that, like, I don't know, they might have a completely different like starting 11, excluding maybe Philip Sander, who, as the boys mentioned, was very good. In fact, was the reason why Alexander Mühlen couldn't get into the team. He's obviously at Sandhausen now. So, like, I think that's a good thing. We talk about teams that, you know, you want to see your younger guys coming through the system. And Zander, in particular, was definitely one of the brighter spots in what was a topsy-turvy season for Kiel. And finally, to conclude the first section of our part two, is Kaiserslautern. They may have been the last team to secure their place in the Zweite Bundesliga last season, but they were more than happy to be the highest placed team out of the promoted sides from the Dritte Liga. They finished ninth with 11 wins, 12 draws and 11 losses, 47 goals for, 48 against. Terence Boyd was their top scorer with 13. Kenny Prince-Redondo and Philip Hirscher, with 5 goals. Marlon Ritter and Philip Clement with the top assist getters with 6, and then Redondo had 5. It was an interesting campaign. They were really great in the first half of the season. They encapsulated the imagination of so many people within the region, and how it had many people thinking of, wow, they really could be up for a promotion. But their second half of the campaign really dipped away, and you know, they finished ninth, which was good. Let's get some good fan perspective. Chris McCarthy, who is a Kaiserslautern fan and a freelance writer, an excellent one at that. He's been featured on publications like The Athletic. We were a bit disappointed they've sacked a bunch of people, but Chris is one of the good guys. Let's hear what he had to say about Kaiserslautern's season.
Overall, this was a great season for Kaiserslautern, especially if you consider where they came from. After 4 years in the third division and almost leaving the scene altogether in 2021, they finished last season as the best of all three promoted teams in the second Bundesliga. In fact, their 45 points, finishing ninth overall, were the most for a promoted side in 4 years. It's an achievement almost no one would have expected last summer. And at the same time, this was a season of two halves, with the latter raising some concerns. It started off great. Driven by the pure euphoria in the region after promotion, Kaiserslautern played some passionate and very direct football. And they even sprinkled in some eye-popping performances like the narrow cup defeat against Freiburg, where Kaiserslautern didn't just park the bus, but actually went toe-to-toe, even stylistically at times, with a Bundesliga side that almost qualified for the Champions League. Mostly, though, Lautern reverted to their very physical approach, and they almost suffocated teams with their intensity and basically forced the results upon them. In midfield, Marlon Ritter was pulling the strings just like he did in the third league, and top scorer Terence Boyd adjusted much better to the second league than many had expected. He scored 13 goals, but equally important, acted as a target man and emotional leader. At the same time, younger players like Julian Nijhuis and Boris Tomjak continued their impressive development and flashed some Bundesliga potential. Kaiserslautern finished fourth place in the first half of the season, and despite the best efforts from Dirk Schuster and CEO Thomas Heng to calm expectations, many started to dream of marching on to the Bundesliga. But with the turn of the year, regression kicked in and Kaiserslautern ran out of steam. There are multiple reasons for this. On the one hand, Kaiserslautern perhaps wasn't underestimated any longer, and teams started to learn how to play against them. This exposed some limitations in the team and in their game, as the more active role in games didn't really seem to suit them, and some players like Jean Zimmer and Eric Durm in the fullback positions had some trouble with increased possession. And this makes it even more puzzling that their best player, Philipp Clement, who led the team in assists and created chances, occasionally fell out of favour, perhaps because Schuster was looking for some more defensive involvement in midfield. You could actually call Clement Kaiserslautern's Özil, a genius on the ball, amazing vision, Bundesliga technique, but sometimes a bit too lethargic without it. Overall, Kaiserslautern became a bit more pragmatic, their game was a bit less pleasing to the eye, and you could sense that some key players' energy and concentration levels started to drop. Lautern ran out of match luck or efficiency, whatever you want to call it, and started to concede too many sloppy goals and waste too many good chances. Lautern actually won only one of their remaining 12 games, collecting a mere 16 points in the Rückrunde, and only three teams had a worse record to show for. But regardless of the stage of the season, their form and the result, at no point could you question the character of this team. They always rose to the occasion, especially against heavyweights like Hamburg, which they beat in what was probably the highlight of the season in terms of intensity and atmosphere in the stadium. On top of that, no team picked up more points after falling behind, often in dramatic and almost inexplicable fashion. It was vintage Kaiserslautern as they brought the myth Betzenberg back to life, the hill on which Fritz Walter Stadium is built and that has terrorized so many opponents in the history of the Bundesliga. And this leads us to Kaiserslautern's probably biggest success this season. Under the calm and collected presence of Thomas Heng, Kaiserslautern has not only stabilized after some very turbulent years, but made so many people in the region fall in love with their club again. On average, over 40,000 people came to the stadium, and almost 5,000 followed them throughout the country. Only Hamburg has better numbers in both categories. At Lautern's final game of the season against Düsseldorf, with nothing to play for and coming off their worst patch of the season, they almost had a sellout crowd with 48,000 fans and showcased one of the many breathtaking tifos that were on display all season. The re-established connection to their fans will be something Lautern will want to build on next season too. However, euphoria won't be as high, and the last months were a subtle reminder that the second season will be much tougher without significant improvements and further reinforcements.
Thank you, Chris. And look, everything he spoke, it was like poetry. I got encapsulated with the words that he said. But also, it was great to know that we are very much thinking quite alike, so that's always good to feel that way. But yeah, look, they had some great patches. He mentions the how they ended the season. That one win was the Hamburg game. They had countless games where they found a way to get a result, and then, you know, that kind of stigma fell away when they lost that game to Bielefeld, celebrating the 25th anniversary of that Bundesliga title. But as a whole, there's a lot to love about their season, especially considering, you know, how difficult it is to come out of the Dritte Liga, and so often we see teams immediately go back down, and I'm almost willing and certain that one or two of the three from next season will probably go down as well. Considering the amount of support they had, they were fantastic in terms of crowds and fantastic tifos and stuff like that. It's really important for them as a football club to to build on that, and we know how difficult it's going to be for them next season.
Yeah, I think with Kaiserslautern always their biggest task is to kind of have a balance between expectations and reality. And I think you can see that from time to time this season when, as a promoted side, sometimes the media, but also you kind of had sometimes the feeling the fans, and all in all, they were expecting more and more of Kaiserslautern because they started so well into the season, where the second leg, and especially the second part of the second leg, was a bit more dull. But I mean, we said so many times in our match day reviews that you can't put it high enough that Kaiserslautern is in a position where they can afford a couple of defeats in a row, and the only thing they have to worry about that they kind of rode on from fourth or fifth place to, I mean, in the end, ninth. They still have single digits table in the place in the table. Great stuff. And I mean, that's a huge success. And the squad was good. I think still that it could need one or two additions for the new season, just when it comes to some sort of, when someone like Boyd isn't working right now, and just sometimes that they had problems, in my opinion, connecting like the different parts on the pitch together. But all in all, it was a very successful first season, a first whole season for Dirk Schuster, obviously, as a Kaiserslautern coach, because never forget he took over for the playoff games. And he has, even a bit of an easier job now getting together a squad, because obviously everyone saw what that Kaiserslautern squad can do. I mean, the whole Philipp Clement thing was a surprise to everyone, that you kind of understood why he wasn't on the pitch from a defensive perspective, but just because Kaiserslautern has had not a depth in squad where you could say, okay, we have someone who is as good as him going forward, and he works well in defense, in my opinion. That was a very huge risk to take, and we probably I would expect that there will be some sort of talks and special training between Schuster and Clement so they can fully kind of use him as with all the strength he has. And I mean, just everything that Chris said, Kaiserslautern always knew how to upset clubs. They, in the end, they got it back that you can never let them go when it comes to terms of chances of getting a point in a game. And I mean, that was a huge success, and similar to obviously all the other clubs that were a surprise up there in the end, probably, where we didn't really expect them. Kaiserslautern is one of the teams you look at. Again, for them, it's going to be the most important thing to kind of bring into balance what expectations are, what the reality is, and what the future might hold.
Yeah, sums it up perfectly. Not really a whole lot I can add, except it definitely felt in their worst moments they had really bad balance. And that you could sell through the spine of the team, where they were a bit confused whether they want to be creative or attacking, or they wanted to really focus on the defensive end, and they were stuck in a bit of a no man's land. And that might be one of the types of players they look for is that anchor in midfield to go with Nyhus or Ritter. And I find Ritter's more of a creative outlet in a deeper role. I'm intrigued to see what they do in the window. We know how hard the league's going to be. We know how the league's always hard, but always the second season in particular. Teams get found out if they haven't planned their squads well heading into the new campaign. Let's take our one and only break, and we will be back soon to discuss the final three teams from the mid-table, and we are going to start with Hannover. One of the disappointments of this season has to be Hannover. They talked the talk heading into the new season, but they didn't walk the walk. 10th place, which is a minor improvement on what they managed last season. 12 wins, 8 draws and 14 losses. 50 goals they were able to raise the bat, but they also gave up 55 goals. One of their finds was Cedric Toykert, who had a great season, career high in goals with 14. Harvard Nilsson had 8, and Maximilian Bayer, who will not be returning, managed 7. Derek Kuhn was their leading assist getter with 6. Louis Schaub came on in the second half of the season and made an impact, but it would be fair to say that Stefan Leitl's first season in charge of Hanover was one of underachievement. Let's get some perspective then. Alexander is a footballing expert and a UEFA pro coach. He is someone who features quite heavily in the VNV Hanover podcast. I've absolutely probably butchered that one. Anyway, let's hear what Alex has to say.
Hanover 96 finished the season at position 10 in the second Bundesliga. In summary, I can say that this is certainly not the placement that the squad, the club and the fans expected. Especially when you look at the first half of the season with position 5 in the table. But the results in 2023 were weak and not good enough. In my view, Hanover is still a big and traditional club in the second Bundesliga with a top 5 budget. And that's why the expectations are always high in Hanover. But let's start with the beginning of the season. Hanover started a change with a new coach, Stefan Leitl, a lot of new faces within the team and a different playing identity. Martin Kind, sporting director Markus Mann, and coach Leitl issued a 3-year plan to achieve promotion and a return to the Bundesliga. Already in the first season, a single-digit place in the table should be achieved and the rebuilding of the team should be promoted. Offensive, attractive, courageous and dynamic. Leitl's style of football is based on an offensive idea with guiding principles. He has already played that style successfully at Greuther Fürth and he wanted to implement it in Hanover as well. After a good preparation period, Hanover failed the start of the season with a defeat in Kaiserslautern and only 1 point from the first 3 matches. With a changed system from a 4-4-2 diamond to a 5-3-2 or 3-5-2, and an adapted, more compact style of play, the rest of the first half season was a success. Hanover stabilized the defense and was particularly strong in the transition game. The fifth place raised hopes for promotion places for the new year. After the long winter break, Hanover wanted to attack upwards in the table. But the start in 2023 also failed with a home defeat against Kaiserslautern, and that was the beginning of an extremely weak second half of the season with the 16th place and the most goals conceded of all teams in the new year. Many tactical and personal changes ensured that Hanover also lost stability and a playful line. Only at the end of the season, Leitl's team was able to make positive headlines with 3 wins and 4 unbeaten games. Due to the 1-5 defeat against Kiel on the last match day, Hanover slipped back to the 10th place in the table and missed their own target for the season. All in all, I must say that Stefan Leitl's first season in Hanover was mixed up with ups and downs and with different periods. I really appreciate the playing philosophy, but it could not be consistently implemented. Hanover needs to strengthen and stabilize, especially on their defense. I believe that the basis for success always lies in a good defense, with few goals conceded. The best example is Darmstadt with 13 matches without conceding a goal. And in my view, Hanover with 55 conceded goals was not good enough to get a better position and a better result in the season. Success always includes a building of a strong central axis. In my view, it's important for Hanover for the future to improve the squad structure and quality in the center, especially in the area for leaders and experienced players. And Hanover also needs an absolute goal scorer for higher targets, a real number 9. You have players with individual quality around that position, like Cedric Teuchert, Louis Schaub or Harvard Nilsson. But in my opinion, you need a real number 9 who makes a difference to attack and to be at the top of the second Bundesliga. The most conspicuous players of the season were certainly top scorer Cedric Teuchert with 14 goals and 4 assists, and left back Derek Köhn, who was strong in attacking his outside zones. What remains positive is that Stefan Leitl has integrated many young players in a lot of matches, such as Bright, Arian B, Enzo Leopold, Maxi Bayer, or finally Yannick Lewis. And this is also the path of Hannover for the future. Stefan Leitl, as head coach, gave the team a clear structure and a phase again. This process has to be continued in the new season, and this is important to realize the 3-year plan as soon as possible.
Hey, thank you, Alex, and fantastic analysis of the situation that was for their season. And we talk about where it all went wrong for Hannover, and I like to look at the particular part where they went 9 games without a win. That started with the final match day of the Hinrunde and went all the way up to match day 26 when they finally beat Sandhausen, and then they followed that up with a 6-1 loss at Hamburg. So, look, they obviously couldn't get it together in the second half. They had, I wouldn't say balance issues with the way they played, but certainly the players who overachieved in the first half. We look at guys like Ron Robertzilla, who was arguably the best goalkeeper of the Hinrunde. They were a lot stronger in defence. They just, it's almost as if they'd forgotten to go back off holiday and get back to work, and they were very sluggish out of the gates. Only 4 victories in the Rückrunde, which included two wins against sides that were relegated. Obviously, if this is part of the 3-year plan, it's a little bit below where they expect it to be, but they certainly, if they can get it right in the window, they could be a team that could be in that top 6 heading into next season.
Yeah, I think with Hannover, the thing is, a disappointment always seems a bit harsh, but the thing is that we had expectations, and obviously we were part of a group of people who kind of misunderstood that they kind of want to get back into the Bundesliga right away, or now this season under Leitl. But at the same time, this first positioning was not reached, and for example, due to a 5-1 defeat to Kiel, and the problem with Hannover was always that you, I think as a fan, it was very frustrating, and we said this plenty of times during the season, that you kind of saw at the beginning of the season what they could do, but this is where we were a bit skeptical, because it didn't give us the feeling of something that could stay, or is something that is really thought through and has more something to do with opponents' problems with Hannover. And I mean, it's always who scored always has this those characteristics on, and they're basically when they have strengths and weaknesses and style of play. And for strength, it says team has no significant strength. It's always not a good thing to have written on this kind of in this column, kind of to have nothing standing there. And obviously, I mean, we tried to analyze Hannover throughout the season. Alexander did very well saying why they should have been better. And obviously, something we said before, that the real number 9 is really, really missing from that team, that someone like Cedric Teuchert and Harvard Nielsen just can't fill that role, that someone like Henrik Weidand is just not on the level of playing that sort of position with the rest of the team. It just didn't mix well. And obviously, it's always, yeah, you could really see that Hannover's biggest problem was that they lost the fans at some stage during the season, and kind of it doesn't help when you try to sell your last game as the reunion and then you lose 5-1 to a team. We in this part of the review established that this was one of the 2 good games, fans would say. And obviously, I think the biggest problem was that players like, for example, Derek Kuhn, who what they could do, like goal wise, assist wise, was good. But their role as a defender, so the role that they play, that was where they had huge difficulties and deficits as well. And obviously the whole defense was something they didn't really bring together well in the second part of the season. And what we said throughout the season, that this first half of the season just didn't give enough ground to build on or to develop, but rather that it was a period where it worked or it could work, but not like they expected. And yeah, they have obviously the pressure is a bit different than this year, but still, I mean, if they had this 3-year plan, obviously they can't say, okay, we didn't expect Hertha and Schalke to go down, so this year we don't care what's going to happen. They definitely want to be in the mix with maybe clubs like St. Pauli, Karlsruhe, HSV, obviously, who really, really want to be a part of that top group to come end of next season. And I still think there is a lot to do there. And this will be something we will definitely take a look on.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, they've definitely got the finances to be a team within the top six. I think they're one of those squads that will have to continue to fine-tune what their balance, like the team looks like in terms of structure and how they wanted to work out. I would say the first half of the season, it was a great indicator of whether or not the style of football with the squad they had was sustainable. And it showcased in the second half of the season that it wasn't sustainable enough to keep going. And they were extraordinarily sluggish out of the gate, and they were made to be punished for it. So 10th is not exactly where they want to be. They definitely have a team that, with some improvements, could be one of those that makes it to the top six. Let's talk about Magdeburg season. They were the champions of the Drissa Liga heading into this campaign, and they were hoping to avoid their previous fate back in 2018-2019. That was relegation. Christian Tietz brought a style of football that was possession-based and one that was hoping would be sustainable throughout the 34 matches. Well, they did enough, finishing at 11th in the campaign with 12 wins, 7 draws and 15 losses. A bit heavy on the defeats, but we'll talk about why in a moment. 48 goals, 4-55 against Moritz Brony. Kwarteng was their only double-digit goal scorer with 10. Barasatic had 8, and Tatsuya Ito and Jason Checker had chimed in with 5 each. Checker was in fact their leading assist getter with 11, followed by Barasatic. Let's get some perspective, and we've asked Oliver, who works for MDR Sachsen-Anhalt. He covers FC Magdeburg with great detail. Let's hear what he had to say about Magdeburg's campaign.
Yeah, the football club Magdeburg was promoted to Zweite Bundesliga the year before. And it was their only second year ever in this league. So last time in 2018, they came as champions. And yeah, they wanted to stay in second Bundesliga. But in the end, it was only a big adventure. And they were relegated after 1 year only. And yeah, this time they wanted to do better. And what was special about Magdeburg in the first half of the season as a team that was promoted, they often had possession of 60 or even more percent. So they really wanted to have the ball and wanted to control the game. But often enough, they lacked the physical stability. And so when they lost the ball and they were often playing like with a goalkeeper next to the center of the pitch, having two center backs next to the lines, and more or less all other players being in the opponent's half and really trying to play, but often they lost the ball in their build-up and became victims to counter-attacks, and so got a lot of goals that were very simple and always like looked the same. And the big question was, how can they improve? But when it came to the second half of the season, the first 3-4 games looked pretty much the same. I mean, there were some highlights in the first half, like when they won against Hamburg, but these were very few moments. And yeah, coming to the second half, it looked very much the same for some games, so they conceded a lot of easy goals. And then there was a game against Karlsruhe, who back then were also on the edge of relegation. And Magdeburg scored the equalizer in extra time, but the fans were very disappointed, and they told the players on the fence. And yeah, the next days, the board of the club was very busy moderating between the coach, the players, and also the fans to create a better mood and better atmosphere between them, because they knew they need each other to be successful. And somehow this game against Karlsruhe was the turning point of the season. So suddenly Magdeburg defended better. One reason was they signed Daniel Haber from Essen in winter, and he helped a lot to improve the defense. And also some key players who's been injured or out of form in the first half of the season came closer to what they can actually play. Of course, we have to mention Barış Artık. So he's like the key player of Magdeburg, and yeah, was delivering assists, was scoring goals, and he was really leading the team in the second half of the season. And that's one of the main reasons why they improved. And the other main reason is, yeah, they became better in defending, or more stable in defending, conceded less goals. And yeah, suddenly they started winning. I mean, they've been playing well all the time, but suddenly they started winning. And so after some weeks, they said goodbye to the relegation zone, had some more great moments, won another time against Hamburg, and yeah, finished the season without any danger of being relegated, and hope now to become a permanent member of the second Bundesliga for some time at least. And if you ask me, if you win against Hamburg twice, it's only fair that both teams stay in the league they were before.
Thank you, Oliver, and some interesting perspective on their season. It's obviously a positive for them that they reach the heights of safety. And they're certainly in a good position, in my opinion, to become a foundational mid-table club over the next few years. The one thing that worries me is still their defense. The 55 goals almost hides the fact that they had some really miserable performances where they found incredible ways to concede goals. But the bright spot for them is forward of center. And that trio, well, depending on how the trio works, whether it's Kwarteng, Atik and Cheka, or with Ito, or however, they're very dynamic on the up forward, and they play such an exciting brand of football that it's hard not to engross yourself in watching them week to week. Whether it's sustainable heading into next season, which is going to be quite interesting given who's coming in, that will be the test for me, and I wonder how they'll go.
Yeah, I think we said before that we have a year where all three promoted sides stay in the league one way or another. And I mean, you really have to say that Magdeburg is one of the sides that had some maturity to its way of playing football. That was a very impressive from everyone around. And obviously where teams had huge problems, like HSV. But obviously also other teams that they were just in a position where they could just force their opponents into the way they wanted them to play. And that is something that is you don't really see often from teams that are promoted into the Zweite Liga. And obviously, as Oliver pointed out, this was only the second time. But obviously with a coach who has a very, very clear way of playing, and who has, I think, a very good idea of how to combine young players and experienced players together, and obviously give someone, I think it's always the most characteristic thing for me is similar like to Ito, who we've seen score the same goal like 8 times, or we at least we had the feeling at some sort. But he was just because he, you had the feeling Christian told him, you know what you can do, you will get into a position where you can do that, and as soon as you are in that position, there's no way anyone can take you away from that opportunity. And I think that's something that he gave every single one in that team. I mean, obviously there were some outstanding players and some were not, but especially and Oliver said that the addition of Daniel Heber was a very, very good one. I always think back to the game against Düsseldorf, which they lost in the end, but still where they I think Daniel Heber cleared on the line 2 or 3 times in just a single game, and you really had the feeling everyone on the pitch was doing everything at some point for that team. And that's why, I mean, they had results like the defeat against Sandhausen, where you could just see, okay, as soon as there is a team who doesn't, like, no offense to Sandhausen, but doesn't want to play football at all, they had the problems. But they were, the majority obviously was that they could actually get a result out of it in the end. I mean, they definitely have to improve some parts. I think they can score more goals. I think that's one of the reasons. And obviously there were too many losses in the end, which came obviously in that part which Oliver said. But it's going to be really interesting to see. I would say to all of the teams that got promoted last season, it's the same like what we said for Rostock this season. The second year can be even more trickier, because obviously you need another squad that is not coming out of that euphoria of promotion, but who has some sort of expectations, and they obviously want to try and do that and want to have some consistency so they can play a part in Zweite Bundesliga for longer. But I'm really interested to see what Christian Tietz and Magdeburg can do in the future.
Absolutely, and some of the signings they have made so far have a real Haasvel feel to them. The one thing they'll want to avoid starting next season is to not get out of the blocks as slowly as they did. They had one win in their first 7 games, and that included some pretty hefty defeats at St. Pauli and against Hanover. So we'll see what they come up with, but definitely in terms of like footballing philosophy, they are enjoyable to watch. And finally, the last team we'll talk about in our part 2 of the season review will be Greuther Fürth. They were one of the 2 sides that were relegated from the Bundesliga last season, and their season was turbulent, shall we say. Mark Schneider was given the keys to the car to start the season, but he lasted all but 12 match days. It was a difficult beginning. Rainer Widmeier was the caretaker for 1 match before Alexander Zorniger took the reins and held the reins for the remainder of the season. 10 wins, 11 draws, 13 defeats. Branimir Hogurta was their only double-digit goal scorer with 11. Julian Green, who ended the season quite well, and Ragnar Ake had 7 goals apiece. Simon Asta was their top assist getter with 6. Let's get some perspective. Let's hear from Michael Fischer, who is a part of the Flugpasser, but also has been on our podcast this season to talk about Fürth. Let's hear what he had to say about De Kleeblatt's season.
Oof. What a season with Fürth. After relegation from the first Bundesliga, Stefan Leitl left De Kleeblatt and joined Hannover. He was replaced with Mark Schneider, a young coach from Switzerland who worked for the small club FC Thun and the Belgium team Vosland Beveren. At first, it seemed to be a very good decision. Schneider was very positive, laughed almost always, and many fans, and me as a reporter, thought it could get a very nice story. Above that, Fürth signed a lot of very promising talents. The biggest names were Amindo C from FC Bayern and the 17-year-old Sidney Rebiger, who was one of the biggest talents in German youth football. But then it got very complicated. After a good game against Kiel that ended with a draw, Fürth lost the Franken Derby in Nürnberg, and 1 week later the cup match against Stuttgart Kickers from the 5th League. The fans were very aggressive because of the two disappointing results and did not get very happy in the following weeks. Fürth did not win any game until September when they beat top one team Paderborn with 2-1. If they wouldn't have won this game, Schneider probably had been sacked. But in the weeks after this, it didn't get better. And boss Rashida Susi decided to end Schneider's time in Fürth 3 weeks with no one win later. Yeah, then Alexander Zorniger came and had a very good start. Fürth won 3 games in a row against Bielefeld, Hamburg SV and Braunschweig and played 1-1 against Darmstadt. With 10 points in 4 games, Zorniger has got as many points as Schneider in 13 games. But in the new year, it was a rollercoaster trip. Fürth played good and the next week it was horrible. They lost almost every away game, but in the Rundhof they were very successful. Because of being so inconstant, Fürth had to tremble until the 33rd game day when they played at Hamburg SV. Yeah, but the season ended with a 4-0 against promotion team Darmstadt with 4 very nice goals. It was a forgiving end of a very hard and tough season. Let's see if the next season will be more successful and, I hope, a bit more relaxed. Stay tuned. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mikkel. And yeah, look, out of the out of all the carnage and the really poor start to the campaign, no one likes to see to lose in the first round of the Pokal and then losing to Nürnberg. But they did obviously win. They won that fixture in the second leg. It's kind of really difficult to see what was entirely positive about their campaign. Defensively, it didn't seem like it clicked. Obviously, the change of system to more of a five at the back brought some stability, but then they had games where they really struggled to create chances. Definitely seemed as if the overall squad balance didn't really work in with either manager, with Schneider and then Zorniger. It seems like, I don't know how to describe it, a progress is what it is, probably what it was towards the end of the season. Is in it's a work in progress. They want to bring some players back who they had on loan, but nothing seemed to click for long enough that you could feel confident that next season will be an improvement.
Yeah, I think, and I mean, this is, first of all, I still think that they hold on too long to Max Schneider in the end. Obviously, it's always the what could have been, but I mean, obviously, I had a different view in Fürth just because they were one of the relegated teams in the Bundesliga as well, and you kind of had the comparison that both teams really, really struggled with choosing a Swiss coach. And obviously, I think I had the feeling that Fürth-wise, there were demands that they should have let Schneider go a bit earlier. But I mean, at that point, when Zorniger came in, he did what he had to do, especially at home. But I mean, we said before, we always had that winter break where we said, okay, how is it going to go? Like, what food will we see after that? And then I think we said this in the reviews, that we were a bit disappointed of what came out with the things Zorniger also said before the break. I think all in all, Zorniger has, obviously, summer transfer window is always a very different one to the winter transfer window, because obviously you know which league you know I play for at least a period of time. It's very different to the winter one, and obviously you have it starts at zero. Like winter, we always had the feeling like, okay, the dices can be re-rolled kind of, but obviously you still had every team who had their package to carry through that second leg, and it was obviously with Fürth it was the same. I think they were a bit disappointed in the end because 12th place was one of the worst places in the table under Zorniger, which sounds a bit weird after like that winter period. But I mean, Michael pointed out where they kind of had the problems, and it was a very difficult season for them in the end. But I think it's going to be once again one of these teams we will have a look at how, when someone like Zorniger has a full summer to prepare ironically, this is less time than they had between, obviously, the two match days from first leg and second leg. But so obviously, it's a very different outlay. And yeah, I think there needs to be improvement in the squad. I think that's pretty clear. I think they need some addition for that midfield offensive position so that that connection is better. So both midfield and like the striker, because I think, yep, the whole focus was once again on Brandon Mihogota. And if you want to have a sustainable future, I think you need someone either like Ragnar Ache to really, really improve and to really have some sort of consistency, or you need someone who can accompany him there. And that will be one of the biggest tasks Rashid Azouzi has probably to fill. Yeah, we will see. I mean, the summer is still relatively long for them to figure that out, 2 months until the new season starts.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference is, you know, you're not really active in the window during the winter time, but the summer we've got players out of contract. They've already added Dennis Sabeni and Karim Çalhanoğlu on free deals, so which is decent business for them. I mean, they, you know, without being able to keep Michael Yoon, Çalhanoğlu is a good stable option. That's a 2-year deal with a team option for a third. Sabeni hasn't been able to catch the lightning in a bottle that he did a couple of seasons ago, where he scored 16 times for Paderborn. So that's a bit of a high risk, high reward for a 29-year-old striker who doesn't do a lot of high pressing. But you know, he could be the answer, one of the answers they're looking for heading into next season. That's it for us. We'll be back next week to discuss the final six teams from the Zweite Bundesliga. We hope you have a fantastic weekend. You enjoy the time off because there's not a lot of football going on. And we'll see you then when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.